Hi, I'm Case Lowe, co-host of the Open the Voice Gate podcast. The one question I'm constantly asked when it comes to Dragon Gate is how do I get into the promotion? Well, stop asking and start listening to the Open the Voice Gate podcast, released every Wednesday on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. For exclusive news and show reviews, look no further than the leader in Dragon Gate coverage, Open the Voice Gate.
Hello, do you like New Japan Pro Wrestling? Are you a Shin Nihon freak? If so, check out the Super J-Cast with Joel and Damon on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network.
And even if you fucking hate New Japan Pro Wrestling, listen to the Super J-Cast anyway. Not just for our great show reviews, analysis, and pastrami sandwiches, but there's also usually some dick jokes somewhere in the obligatory opening 30 minutes of absolute nonsense we chat about every single week. That's the Super J-Cast for all the best talk about New Japan Pro Wrestling, crisps, and pornography.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Welcome back to another episode of The Good, The Bad, and The Hungy here on the Voice of Wrestling Podcasting Network. I'm your host, Tyler Furness. With me, as always, my co-host, Fred Moreland, who also hates your kid just like FTR does.
And Gabe Kidd, I guess.
Oh, that Gabe Kidd line was so funny because it's just... Gabe Kidd just feels so authentic. I haven't seen a lot of the stuff from WrestleMania weekend yet, but I heard all the Dragon Gate stuff's been really good. I had fun watching the TNA show. Nothing was bad. It was all like 3 to 3.75 quarters. Just
okay, cool.
Good, entertaining, engaging. Joe Hendry's incredibly over. I did not realize that.
Oh, yeah, he is. It is lightning in a bottle. And that's a good thing. It doesn't sound nice, but I mean it nice.
He's mega over. Like, I was shocked. But yeah, that was fun. Bloodsport was iffy. You have to watch Natty, Neidhart, and Bloodsport.
Oh, yeah. Was it bad or?
It was weird. Okay. I'm not going to tell you any more about it. Just go watch it.
Okay.
It's must watch.
I need audio for it?
You should have audio for it. Watch it after.
Okay, I'll save it. Okay, I'll save it. I have two other things I need to watch with audio on, apparently, which are the top two matches, I think they were, from the Mark Hitchcock Memorial Show.
Wasn't one of them the CMLL Dragon Gate tag?
Oh, was that actually at the top of the card? I thought, no. Okay, so it was the two before that. But apparently they had back-to-back the Butterbee and Minoru Suzuki match and the Maki Ito Mickey James match, which both are the women's match is sitting at 1.10 on Cage Match, and Suzuki Butterbean is sitting at 1.08 at this very moment.
Look,
not good.
Good for Minoru Suzuki for continuing to get booked and get work. He's way past his prime.
The paper is being chased.
Yeah, and you know what? Good for him. He should chase the paper, but damn, Butterbean? Sorry if you get some ambient noise in the background. My dogs are playing, and I'm just glad I don't have to crate them up. So you may get a little extra dog noise. We are cool, like the flagship. Fred, I want to start off the show. We got to talk about how awesome FTR is right now.
Oh, yeah. FTR is finally, like, they have a direction and it rules. And it's really cool. We actually, because look, I had FTR as like my number two tag team. I actually think I had them over Axiom and Nathan Frazier last year just by match quality. But yeah. Like, you know, all year they weren't doing shit. They were basically like, at best, they were plucky friends of insert babyface here, whether it be Adam Copeland or Daniel Garcia or whatever, which is not very interesting, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of the trade-off. You got them in matches regularly, and those matches were good, but FTR themselves were just like present, you know, just doing those matches and then just hanging in the background. They have a fire under their asses right now because of that heel turn they did on Adam Copeland in the pay-per-view, which was awesome. Great heel turn. And they made, not last night's episode of Collision because I have not watched that yet, but they made the previous episode of Collision, the last Saturday one, basically the FTR jerk show. And it ruled. And they got like three feature segments. Every single one, they were just more and more heelish. And it was great stuff. I loved it. I loved it. You know, so fantastic stuff. I thought that episode of TV was really good. I did end up skipping. I think there was a Athena Harley Cameron match, and there was like a Gates of Agony squash I skipped as well. But otherwise, that was a really good episode of TV, and strongly recommend that. And then we had one of the best Dynamites of history. So what a week for AEW television.
Yeah, it was. That FTR stuff was awesome. And I will say, Matt Menard is everything that's great about pro wrestling.
Oh, he's such a perfectly made for this business, you know.
He gets it. Oh, Marzipan, don't fall, please. She just, my new Boston Terrier just fell off the couch playing with Odie. Yes, I know. It's exciting. We love AEW in this house. But just watching how some of this stuff went down, it was just great. They saw, hey, they pushed Garcia. They knew what was going to happen, and they tried to protect him, and they couldn't. And it was just so well done. And
yeah. Oh, I love the Nigel Tony Schiavone too. I love the heel names announcer stands up for the wimpy baby face announcer gimmick. I think that's a great shtick. I like that a lot.
That was a great little touch, I'm not gonna lie.
I would love to see like that lead to like babyface Nigel McGuinness against FTR in some way. I don't know if they're going to do that or if it was just kind of a one-off thing, but I thought it ruled regardless.
Oh no, it was awesome. I recommend you go watch that episode of Collision. But let's get through the news. I wanted to at least touch on that because it was so great.
Same episode also had a 4.5-star in my book, Takeshita. Sorry, words are hard.
Brody King.
Takeshita Brody King, yes, thank you. That I thought just rocked so hard. I loved it.
Let me ask you this, because I think that's an interesting segue here. Are they giving Brody King the Takeshita push right now?
Brody King, I think so.
He's wrestling a lot. He's having great matches. And he's losing consistently.
I think that they're doing a great job of protecting him in these losses because he still came off as like a world beater despite losing two to Takeshita. I thought that was really impressive. There's actually a lot of very good booking on the show, I thought, between protecting Brody like that and also just all the different ways that they like weave people into the FTR storyline. I thought all that stuff was fantastic, and I really liked it, obviously. And I also thought that, those were probably the two booking highlights. But I mean, they also did a nice job with Tony Storm cutting a promo, putting over all future opponents in the women's zone. I thought there was just a lot of like thought and consistency in this episode of Dynamite that I really appreciate, or I'm sorry, Collision that I really appreciated.
Mm-hmm. And there were 8 matches, more squash matches.
Yeah,
like squash matches are good on television. But yeah, just a great episode of Collision leading into one of the best episodes of pro wrestling television of all time. Wednesday night's Dynamite, which passed Monday Nitro, which was just perfect because it was the antithesis of what Nitro was. They just were everything AEW. It was great action, high-end wrestlers, and it was just perfect. But let's get to some news first. The Wrestling Observer reported, I believe it was The Observer, that Mariah may be heading to WWE. There's been some interesting stuff. Did she ask out of her contract, or is her contract expiring?
Because I think the latter.
Okay. Because I've seen both. And either way, look, it seems like WWE is the destination for her, which, you know what? Good for her. And the AEW run was perfect. Yep. It was a year and a half, 2 years, and they built her up. She got the title. They got Tony over, and Tony might be more over than anybody in the company right now, other than Will Ospreay, because I don't think anybody is going to top Will Ospreay, but she is over.
I think she's more over than Ospreay, to be honest.
And I, you know what? I think you can have a debate. I don't think so, but I don't think you're insane. Yeah. And then you have...
And Swerve needs to be mentioned in that discussion. Oh,
Swerve is a megastar. But, I mean, if you've been listening to this show for any length of time, you already know that. Because we were on Swerve in, like, January of 24, maybe. No, probably earlier than that. Probably, like, January 23.
Yeah, I think that was when I started saying he needs to be pushed to the main eventer. And you were either at the same time. We were very close together on that. So
I think we were at the same time. We were in lockstep. Yeah. It's
We were on that early, and I do think that's one of the smarter things we've said on the Stovey show.
Yeah, I know. There is a lot of interesting elements here, but I think Mariah May getting over Toni Storm might be the feather in her cap for her career. Mm-hmm. Like, Toni Storm, the gimmick was, look, it was rough.
It started rough. It wasn't entirely bad, but there was unfortunate aspects of it, I think would be a fair way to put it.
It didn't feel like there was cohesion or a real plan for what...
No, I remember early on, like early, like those first couple of weeks, that they were really slingshotting around like what they were trying to do with this thing. And... compared to now, like they not only do they definitely know what they want to do with this character, but I think what's really cool is that they Tony is so confident in what she's doing right now, and that's what's really impressive to me, I think, because you could just tell from people sometimes that that they are comfortable with what they're doing. And she is, this is the most comfortable I may have ever seen her, on television.
It just feels like they figured it out. And that's awesome that they have figured it out. I'm very happy with the direction of where things are going there. And you know what? I loved when you talked about the collision bit and she's going through everybody. And then she's just like, Chris Statlander. What a woman. No insults, just what a woman. I found that very interesting because it says that there's a lot of like real respect between the two. And in storyline, like Monet has beaten Statlander twice. I don't know if Tony's beaten Statlander.
I don't think so. I don't even know if they've had a singles match. I'm currently checking. Just give me a couple seconds on cage match. But I think that match would be a lot of fun. I'd love to see that. They have never had a singles match. Now, they did have a triple threat or three-way, whatever you prefer. Actually, at the start of this year, for the number one spot in the Casino Gauntlet, Chris got the win against Tony and Willow Nightingale.
Oh, well, there we go.
Yeah.
There we go. Yeah, Mariah May likely going to WWE. She's at WrestleCon this weekend. But
frankly, good for her. I mean, like, the way it's been talked about is it's like this is her, that would be her dream opportunity. And, obviously, I think she'd do very well there. I think there's no doubt that she would be a great fit for what WWE does and what their roster would need. I think she'd probably go in as a high-level star. They are very much enthusiastic about bringing in and pushing you know, the stars from AEW. And, you know, I think that you could argue maybe it's a little too much, perhaps. But just in terms of, like, you know, this past week, I did see, like, a video on the social medias where someone highlighted how WWE's, like, turned four storylines into just AEW, you know, extensions, I should say. And I don't know that that's really smart, but, you know, they are a very, they're still a hot company. They aren't at their height, I don't think. But, anyways, yeah, I think that she should make the jump. I think she'd be in a much better position with WWE going in than if she were to stay with AEW. I think in AEW there is a fair question of where exactly would she slot in. And I don't think that that's unfair to wonder about if you're or IMA, you know. And, you know, when you are making these decisions, you have to think, you have to look out for yourself, you know?
Yeah.
So I have no problem with her making the jump. And jumps are what make wrestling interesting. It can easily revitalize people. We definitely saw that with Cody Rhodes, because he was in a situation where he felt very awkward in the AEW universe. And I hate that I just said that, but on AEW TV, because, you know, the fans were turning on him for a variety of reasons. And, you know, so he bopped to WWE. Now he's the hottest full-time star in wrestling.
Yeah.
I don't know how you could consider that anything but a success from his point of view. So,
and you know what? I'm going to be real. The more talent that we see go from AEW to WWE and have success, it might be initially a bad look for AEW, but it also says that, hey, they know how to identify talent.
Yeah.
So even
I'm sorry.
So even if WWE doesn't like offer you a deal and AEW brings you in and you grow and then you can have success elsewhere, that can also be somewhat of a recruiting tool. You don't want to make yourself look minor league, which is a real danger when you're having some of these conversations when guys will go over there. But Cody was a WWE castoff that AEW, like he founded AEW.
Yeah.
And then he goes over and now he's their biggest star. He's their biggest star because of AEW, because of what AEW was. And because of what Cody did outside of the company, that's why he's a big star now.
Yeah.
So that can be somewhat of a recruiting tool if you understand how to use the nuance and stuff. Because let's be real, if you present yourself in a poor way, it can make you look incredibly minor league. But yeah. Jumps are great. Like the territories, you can wear yourself out. And then guess what? You can go from Florida to Crockett to World Class to Portland to the AWA in Minnesota, to the WWF. Like, there were opportunities for you. So, making jumps, like, TNA being with WWE really sucks right now for that reason.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I would much rather see TNA as just a standalone place for the likes of Mike Santana and Steve Macklin to find themselves and really get themselves over versus, like, you know, NXT 2 or something. But that's another conversation for another day. So yeah, I fully expect Mariah May at this point, just from the chatter that is out there in the public, to jump. And I don't think that's really going to hurt AEW. In fact, I think AEW's women's division right now, who they have on TV, and that's without Britt Baker, who I also would expect to jump to WWE at some point. And without Mariah May, I think it's a very strong division right now. I think that there's still some shortcomings sometimes in terms of match quality. I think there's just some more variance than you would necessarily want, I guess, if that makes sense. But still, it's a strong group. I mean, Willow Nightingale, Chris Statlander, Toni Storm, of course, Mercedes Moné, Athena. They finally pulled her off of Ring of Honor to put her on the actual TV show that matters, which I don't know why it took so long, but And you can just go on and on. I mean, Billy Starks has a future. I was watching her in that Jamie Hayter match. I don't think I even mentioned Jamie Hayter, but she should be mentioned. But I was watching that match from this last Saturday's Collision. And Starks is very interesting in that I think she simultaneously, at times, does not look super athletic. But at other times, looks like she has a really good feel for how to work. And it's an interesting kind of mixture, considering her age. I would expect that to be like the combination for someone older, right? But that's where she is right now. And I don't know. Watching her going forward is going to be really interesting, I think, because there's the part, like, she had some, when she was on offense in particular, it looked like she was very slow doing a fair bit of the stuff. Not like to the point it sucked or anything, but it was slow enough where you I think you would have a hard time not noticing. But I also thought that whenever she was pretty good at selling, and the ideas they had in the match, I don't know, and I don't know if it should be really attributed to Billy, was very interesting and smart. So I like that aspect of it. But I mean, you compare it to what Jamie Hayter was doing in that match, and Jamie is just easily much more of an athlete. So that was just a thought I had stuck in my head regarding Billy Starks from that show.
This is going to sound kind of weird, Fred, but I want to throw this by you.
Yeah, sure.
Billy Starks kind of gives me some CM Punk vibes, where
I see where you're coming from.
She loves this business. She works really hard, and it feels like she has a decent mind for it too, mm-hmm. but just doesn't have the athleticism and the package that you want from somebody in the modern day business. It like, she just doesn't have that aspect of it. She's clunky. She doesn't move super fluid, but she has a want and desire to be great. It's
we can never fault her for effort, from what I've seen.
The effort is great. She can bump that suplex from the apron.
That was a hell of a bump. I hope she's okay. You know, one of those bumps.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was really, really impressive. But I'm not gonna lie, I wish she was a little further along right now, but I also haven't really watched her in Ring of Honor, so I don't have much context other than just the one show to go off of, that match, which was good. I gave it 4 stars. It was also like, she's got that Mercedes Moné thing where it's clunky, mm-hmm. and it's, you know, not smooth, but it's good because then it feels more real. It feels like a fight. It doesn't feel like contrived bullshit. It doesn't feel choreographed. So that's a benefit for her.
And I think a great example of seeing that in action, this is a segue here, maybe, is that the Athena Mercedes match from Dynamite.
That was great.
I thought it was great. So let's talk about that episode. If you want, we can go back to some of the minor news notes. Mariah May is the biggest news of the week, though. The rest of it is kind of just like quick hitters.
Yeah. The one thing that was so impressive about this episode of Dynamite is Athena Mercedes got 20, and then mm-hmm. Ospreay and Takeshita got over 20, too.
Yeah. They distributed the time really well, I thought. And we got, you know, we also had, now I don't think it was great shakes by any stretch, but we also had a long MJF talking segment that I think was, some people, I didn't love it. I didn't hate it either. Let's be clear. I thought it was like, good.
Which segment that you broke up?
The MJF one with the Hurt Syndicate.
It was fine. I liked Joe Lanza's verbiage on the Thursday 2 reviews on the BOW Patreon. It was like Hooters. It was just just trashy enough. It was tacky, but not over the top.
Okay, fair enough.
Like, but I just have no interest in this. I don't.
Yeah, I'm not. I feel like I swear, you know, I apparently am wrong on this. I will proceed saying this with that, but I swore that the week before Shelton gave a thumbs up.
He did.
And I swore that happened, so like it's just in my head. But I feel like the storyline has been not too long or anything, but like kind of spit, you know, like just spinning its wheels a touch too much. I don't know. Maybe I'm out to lunch on that one. I just think it's clear that there's going to be some kind of turn by MJF on the Hurt business, and I feel like maybe we're getting a little too, not quite there yet, but we are getting to the point where it's probably a little too cute. About that, but anyways, let's start with the top of the show, which I mean, this, and by the way, this was the, just so we say it for sure, or at least I say it for sure, this was the episode that gave Dynamite more episodes on Turner TV than Monday Nitro, so this is the record breaker. You know, we'll just have to keep that in mind the next time someone starts talking about it, like 83 weeks.
And you know what? I'll give Bischoff credit, even though it was super backhanded. He did give AEW credit for lasting this long.
Yeah, I saw some headline about that. What did he actually say? I'm just curious.
Let me see if I can find the quote. Okay, here we go. This is a Fightful transcription. I want to congratulate Tony Khan and his entire staff. This obviously means a lot to them, and congratulations. It does say a lot about Tony's commitment. Tony put his own money into this. You can judge the product. I can judge the product. I often have. I just don't watch it anymore. But the truth is his vision, his dream, his money, his commitment. So congratulations, because what he did isn't easy. No matter how anybody feels about the product, it wasn't easy, and it still isn't. So congratulations for your effort. And no, it doesn't bother me a bit. It doesn't mean anything to me. While it does to Tony and company, and I understand why, he put a lot of time and work and money, as I've just discussed. So good for them. But no, it doesn't bother me at all.
Okay. That's fair enough.
That's about as good as you're going to get from Eric Bischoff.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, like, this is historical just because, you know, a lot of people, Bischoff included, were, you know, when this project started, they were happy to talk about how it was going to, you know, die immediately. And, you know, all grifters and everything. Just, you know, whether they just wanted WWE to be good or whatever was their inspiration. I mean, we have a legitimate major promotion in the U.S. that does good business. Does good TV ratings and so on and so forth. Great pay-per-view buys. Ticket sales are drifting upwards, I think, though I also think there's some real concern about the Texas show, that the pay-per-view they're working on, but it's still early, I guess. In general, the company is successful. It's not just a money mark project or whatever, you know, like someone may want to declare as a hater. It's working financially, and take a look at this episode of TV, and critically, it also has a lot of successes. Not that there haven't been down periods at points, but still a lot more to like than not. And I think it's cool. You know, it's great. It's revitalized U.S. wrestling. I'm not going to sit here and say that the show is always perfect or anything, but I think you'd be hard pressed to say that it hasn't done better for professional wrestling in the U.S. than, you know, the alternative of it not existing.
Yeah. I will say it's a perfect show. Nobody can ever say anything bad about AEW. I'm kidding, but It's historic in this sense. A wrestling company that was not WWE has found a real audience with real sustainability, and they make like almost $30 million a year on pay-per-view.
Yeah, like, I mean, it's a viable business, you know.
Yeah,
and more viable. Sorry to kick them while they're down, or you know, just I'm not. This is just historically accurate. I'm not, you know, I'm not anti TNA or whatever, but they are financially better than TNA ever was, or financially more successful as a business than TNA ever was. And you literally have to go back to, you know, to WCW to find anything comparable.
Yeah. I don't think any TNA pay-per-view has ever beaten an AEW pay-per-view in terms of buys.
I think you are correct, yes.
I think every AEW pay-per-view has been over 80,000, with only one, I think, dipping below 100. And the highest TNA pay-per-view, and Gary Kidney, profound TNA expert and co-host, you got to be kidding me on this network. I think, be able to correct me, I think it's like 64,000 was...
Yeah, I think it's around
Glory 06.
Mid fives.
Glory 07, something like that.
Yeah.
I mean, which is a good number for a pay-per-view, but even so... Yeah. They've never reached the heights of what AEW has. And man, I got to tell you, I'm thrilled that they're at this point, but there's more to come. I do think we should get started about the show. This Mercedes Athena match
was lots of fun.
Awesome. It was so good. I was thrilled with how good this match turned out. I gave it 4.25. I thought these two worked well together. It was sloppy in just the right ways because both of these women can peak really high and they can valley really low. Mm-hmm. But their chemistry together was really impressive. It felt like a fight. It was like I talked about with Billy Starks. There was just enough sloppy where it worked and it didn't feel like screwed up. I loved it. I loved it.
I thought this, I gave this 4.25 as well. I saw some people tossing around fives. I personally wouldn't go that high. I thought there was too much sloppy to get it any higher, really.
I do think the sloppy worked in the match's favor, though. So
I'm not going to bust anyone's chops over, you know, going higher on it. I think that there was, I mean, but it was overall a real success. Some really cool spots. Like, my example of the sloppy working was the Tombstone spot, where they were fighting to try to get one or the other over for mm-hmm. Tombstone, and it looked like that they had slipped out of the position they were going for and all that. But I thought it worked really, really well, and I like that a lot. I like that sequence.
There's a spot in the Ospreay-Takeshita match that's very similar that we'll talk about in a little bit. But I really liked how this match ended in a roll-up because it just says, hey, Mercedes got her, but yeah. Mercedes isn't better. Because this was Athena's first loss since winning that world title like 2.5 years ago. That's a big, big deal. And
I really wonder how they're going to follow it up, because are they going to even pay attention to it on AEW TV, or are they just going to kind of ignore it? You know,
I think what's going to end up happening, and this is my tinfoil hat theory. Athena is going to lose at Supercard of Honor in a couple of weeks. And then she's going to go full-time AEW roster. That's my tinfoil hat theory.
I'd like to see her on AEW TV because she's extremely good, very talented, obviously.
A little inconsistent, but peaks very high.
And I think that's, you know, you can describe Mercedes that way too. But yeah, I mean, like this rock, I thought it was a great opener. If someone went higher than 4.25 again, don't really have an issue with that. Just don't agree, but that's okay. But and then we had this followed up with Adam Page against a mystery opponent, which was Josh Alexander. And they had what I thought was a very good match.
Oh, this was awesome. I think that having the wild card lose is good sometimes.
Yeah, it was a cool idea. I went four on this. I like the women's match better.
Before we talk about the match itself, we got to talk about the backstage stuff with the Bucks basically saying, hey, you're welcome for making sure Swerve didn't win the title. And then Okada had one at a great line. Of course, he said, bitch. It's like, why do you always look so sad or so mad? Just, I thought that was a really nice touch because it's something that he's never happy on television. He's always pissed off. And yeah. I think, you know, as far as what Hangman's character is, I think that was a really good touch. I didn't like how he just said, bitch. That kind of sucked. But what are you going to do? I thought it was a good segment. They're obviously teasing Okada Hangman at some point. But I think they're teasing the Elite versus Omega, Hanger, and Swerve. And that's going to be the Double or Nothing match. And then you're going to get the 2v2 and Okada Omega at Grand Slam.
Yeah, and I think those will be a lot of fun. I am ready for, they're clearly setting up Hanger versus Okada, and that'll be a lot of fun, I think, when it does happen. I think this build with the Bucks and Hangman is going exactly how I thought it would. I still think it'll be nice, bold to have the Bucks return like right away to their, the TV show, the gimmick they're doing right now. I don't know that I would have done that, given how kind of shitty it was. Mm-hmm. For long stretches, but you know, they clearly wanted them to be heels, and they just stuck with the thing they were already doing. So okay, I did think it was very interesting from a show structure standpoint, and it doesn't really have any deeper meaning or anything, but to have both Athena Mercedes and Alexander Page have roll ups as the babyface finish, or I'm sorry, as the finishes back to back.
Yeah, I get it, but I also think it works in both cases, so I'm not really about it.
I don't think it was a disaster or anything, let's be clear, but I was just something I was like, huh, okay.
Mm-hmm. I thought this match was one really good. It was a great showcase for Josh Alexander, which, let's be honest, today's AEW fan base as a whole does not know as much about the outside wrestling world as the former fan base used to.
Correct. So, but I think he got a pretty good response too coming out. So there was that. Mm-hmm.
I also thought that Fletcher and Callis coming out and then Callis talking to Alexander because they have that history in TNA and Excalibur did a great job of explaining that. It was a really nice touch. And my God, the semifinal between Hangman Page and Kyle Fletcher, like, look at how juiced up this Owen is.
Yeah, it's a great tournament. Both of them are, I think. Both fields.
The losses in the first round were Mark Briscoe, Brody King, Josh Alexander, and who did Ospreay beat in the first round?
Kevin Knight.
Yeah. That's a pretty good tournament.
Damn good field, yeah.
Like, incredible. So, I liked how they got the attack in at the end. I just thought overall this was a great match and segment.
Yeah. Yeah, I like this quite a bit.
Let's continue to move on here. This was a great segment. The Patriarch were backstage. And Nick Wayne's like, well, made a comment about when your father's not around and all of a sudden Christian Cage is just over to the side and he challenges him to go be commander for the ROH TV title. He's not going to have help at ringside. He has to do it on his own. And you know what? Nick Wayne stood up for himself. So you can tell that push is coming. Yep. But then he won the match on
he did.
What on a Thursday night. We have with WrestleMania weekend, we have not been able to watch that collision, but that did happen. Just awesome. Really awesome stuff here. I don't know how they're going to get to Christian Cage and Cope. They're going
to because the time. I mean, I have to think Cope has taken like months off. But if the idea is that those two are going to get together for revenge on FTR, like I've got to think that they're getting the belts on FTR, which I'm not going to complain about. But
how are they going to get the belts on FTR though? That is a
that's the question, and it's going to take a while, I think. And I honestly, I think that it may be MJF screwing the Hurt Business and
then the Pinnacle reforms.
I don't think that's necessarily a guarantee. They could do that, and obviously that would vibe well with the heel thing that FTR are doing. But at the same time, I could see them like, yeah, that was not really a success. Let's not, you know, revive that. But I think they could probably do better with it too. So I don't know.
Odie is just so funny. He is trying to hump his sister because that's what dogs do. And he's neutered, but he's still getting it. It's so funny. So funny watching. Great color commentary for me as Fred shakes his head in the background. All right. This show was just so good. Now we have the Hurt Syndicate stuff. Really good TV match with Gates of Agony. Like this is like a 3.25, 3.5 star TV match.
I went 3.5 on it.
Good work. I like the Gates of Agony. This is a mid-card tag team that should be wrestling regularly on television.
Yeah.
They don't have to beat everybody. They should beat half the roster and lose to half the roster kind of thing. This is just a good mid-card tag. Yeah. And they kind of remind me of like where they should be slotted. Like, I'm trying to think like the Basham brothers in like 04 SmackDown. Like,
okay. All right.
The brothers were a little over pushed, but eventually they just settled in as this really good mid card tag team. Yeah. They were kind of like a BDSM gimmick, which is really weird, but just have them wrestle all the time on television. Like, use them.
I would go with the Faces of Fear from WCW. I think that's a better comparison personally, but
hey, you know what? You know more than I do, so I'm gonna trust you on that.
All right.
Oh geez. Marzipan just went downstairs. I gotta go take care of that.
So, all right, I'll take over here. So we did get Gates of Agony against the Hurt Syndicate. And this was a fun match. It was four beefy dudes just doing beefy stuff. And I thought it was fun. Now, I do think that, you know, like I mentioned on this after we reviewed the pay-per-view, you know, the deal is with the Hurt Business is that they are not going to be putting on five-star classics. That's not their job. And that's okay. But what they are going to do is they're going to have different kind of matches. And I thought that this was a good example of that. And it was just kind of a beef off, if you will. And I thought it was a lot of fun. So, of course, we had the Hurt Business win. And then after that, MJF came out and tried to win over the Hurt Business. And, you know, once again, Shelton seemed more willing, but not fully willing. MVP was fully on board. And Bobby Lashley was not okay with this at all. And so I think it's pretty clear they're going to set up probably a feud between Lashley and MJF. And, you know, I think you could do worse. I think that could be pretty fun. And, of course, after they go to commercial, they come back and they, you know, show the Hurt Business backstage with all the ladies. Because, you know, MJF was like, oh, I got hot ladies for you. Shelton asked for MJF's expensive watch and they did that as an angle. And then, yeah, And Lashley was like, I don't trust this guy, don't need him, so on and so forth. So we go backstage, and MVP just asks, after Lashley once more says he does not trust MJF, you know, he just gets asked by MVP to, hey, just let's have fun tonight. So that was kind of where they left it. I still, you know, I do think there's some intrigue as to how this goes. The most obvious way is an MJF betrayal. I could see him taking Shelton with him, though honestly, I don't know that that would be in Shelton's best long-term interests as a character or as a performer. But yeah, I like this well enough. I thought this was the weakest stuff on the show, just in general. And the only thing that I think would even really kept me to thinking about if this was a 10 out of 10 show, which I decided it was the stuff with MJF in the ring talking. I thought that was probably the weakest part.
Man, my dogs are nuts.
They're on one right now.
They are on 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5. Marzipan can jump our 30-inch gates in the house, by the way.
Oh, fun.
Yeah. I thought this was a good segment. I'm just, it has this whole
thing. It wasn't bad.
It hasn't grabbed me yet.
Yeah. That's where I am, I think.
To me, that's a little bit of a problem. But I'm willing to let it play out, like with almost everything AEW does. I think there's something there. I know there's a history with MVP and MJF dating back to MLW. I don't understand what that history is, but I know it exists. So we'll see how it goes. I think the fact that Shelton's now ready to say yes, but he's deferring to Lashley, and Lashley's like, hell no still.
Yeah.
But in the backstage segment, he was kind of like, starting to get closer to lukewarm.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, there's some intrigue there.
Yeah, I do think they've done a good job of like making it not immediately obvious what the plan is here. So,
yeah. All right. Now we're getting to some good stuff. Will Ospreay versus Konosuke Takeshita.
I don't even know what to say here other than this rocked.
Is this the best TV match of all time?
I think I liked, I personally liked Omega Vikingo better. That's one that sticks out to me.
Okay.
But
it's in the conversation.
I think, yeah. I think it's fair to have it in that conversation. Just trying to think of what else. Let me pull up my handy dandy list.
Omega, Bryan Danielson, Hangman Page, Kenny Omega Pack.
Yeah. MJF Ospreay, the long match they had on Dynamite last summer. I think that's one you got to think about. Lots of AEW on that list. Of course, who can forget the classic of Hook versus Stokely Hathaway?
yeah, my dogs are really on one. Odie just puked, so I'm going to let you rave about. God. I know. God bless, man. I'll let you rave about this match, and then I'll give my thoughts.
Okay, sure. Yeah, this match was really awesome. And I'm not sure... where to what all to say, because I mean there was just so many moves, and I feel like just doing like a move recap is kind of lame. But like these guys, I will say I've been trying to cover some WrestleMania weekend shows for VoicesOfWrestling.com, and I've done the Defy one and the Dragon Gate USA Rebirth show, and I made the mistake of before watching either of those shows, I watched Takeshita Ospreay, and damn, that's a tough position to put anyone in. These two guys are just extremely talented workers. I think at this moment, Takeshita has had the best in-ring 2025 of anyone in the world that I have seen. And I'm pretty much caught up with New Japan. I really haven't. I'm a fair bit back on the WWE, but I would be shocked if anyone is really having a comparable year there. And I think further on down, like I think that, you know, there's some people in Stardom that I think you could possibly make an argument for, but I would be hesitant just because they seem to be less active, at least in terms of having high-level matches. Tokyo Joshi Pro's been in a weird spot this year. Noah seems to be very much about just, you know, the whole heel group thing they're doing. And given all that, like, you know, All Japan, I don't think has the people doing it right now. And I mean, TNA doesn't. So maybe someone in CMLL, I am shamefully behind there as well. But it's just, I mean, Takeshita is so good and is working so much right now. And I just think that it's obvious that he is having the best year of anyone in wrestling today. And Ospreay is up on that list too. I mean, I have him number two at the moment, just barely above like Kenny Omega and Zack Sabre Jr. But I don't think he's got the obvious lead at this point. I think when you consider quality and quantity, Kesta is number one by a huge margin. And that's with me without even watching the Hiroshi Tanahashi match. And I mean, Tanahashi is, you know, just calling a spade. He's shot. So to have a great match with him in 2025 is very difficult and impressive to do. Tyler, your thoughts? Can't hear you, buddy.
It is a chaotic afternoon in my house. I apologize to everybody, man. It's adopting a dog is great, but the process of getting them used to your routine is not. I thought this match was phenomenal. My absolute favorite match, which is why I almost went five on it, was they did that spot where Ospreay does like the flippy do, and then it goes right into the Liger bomb, but he missed. And without hesitation, Ospreay goes just retransitions once he gathers his bearings, goes for the Os Cutter, and then Takeshita just elbows him in the side of the head.
Yeah. Just
the wherewithal to be able to adapt that quickly was so good. It looked like it was what they meant to do. And the closing stretch was so awesome. I can't say enough good things about this match. They were,
I went 5.25 on it. I think it's number two. Five. It's my number two match on the year right now, behind Omega Gabe Kidd from the Tokyo Dome.
My number one match of the year is, I think it's going to end up being, or as of right now, mm-hmm, Tony Storm and Mariah May.
That's fair.
Oh, that match.
That's in top 10 contention for me right there.
Kid and Omega's too, with relative ease. But man, so much good stuff. So much good stuff this year. But look, I don't know what else I can say about Omega and Takeshita that you haven't already said. They're two of the best wrestlers in the world. They gave you a phenomenal match. Just awesome. Awesome, yeah. Awesome, awesome. And then we're going to get Ospreay versus Hangman Page, which I believe might be a first-time ever match?
I think so. I think it is. But yeah, this was amazing, and I think this is really what pushed this show into like all-timer territory, is having a match of this quality on TV. And that's with me saying that we had two matches already that were great and one that was very good. And then the main event, I mean, not only did we get a great match, but we got with a hot crowd, and this crowd was really hot, and that helped, that made a big difference here. they've been doing a good job of getting in front of crowds that are hot. Part of that is that they are now doing much smaller buildings, which obviously financially is not going to work. Not as ideal, but, you know, as a viewer and someone who does not make money off of AEW, I don't care. I would much rather have them doing their shows in buildings where people are going to be loud and festive about it. And, you know, this was when I went to Dynamite Live last year here in Lexington. Part of the problem was that it was, we're in Rupp Arena, which seats like 10,000 or what the hell ever. And there was like maybe 2,000 people there or whatever number it was. And that was a bummer of an environment. Did not like it. So this crowd was fantastic and a lot of fun to watch, and they really did elevate the show. But, you know, we had the Powerhouse Hobbs surprise partner thing. And, of course, they have done, like, I think they're Death Riders as far as, like, what they've done in ring. Lots you can complain about at points with them. I expressed early on my concern that, like, we'd have Pac and Claudio not having great matches as often, and I think that turned out to be true. But this was a great payoff here where you have this heel group everyone hates, and it's not a cool heel group. They're just heels that are effectively hated. And they got their asses beat. They got their comeuppance a little bit. And I thought it worked out really well. I thought it was a fantastic moment and a great match. I think that this was 4.25 stars. I think I went with, so four plus star matches on the show, including like a top two match for me. And I thought this just, you know, was a great punctuation mark to the show, a great way to book this show that is a celebration of the success of AEW. And I had a blast watching it. So I thought this ruled.
Yeah. I liked so much of this match. One of the things I really liked about it was how they took whatever the bad situation was with Hook, which I believe it was the fact that I think he got concussed last week because he puked in the ring, and it went relatively unnoticed until later on.
About that with everything going on, but yes, mm-hmm. Yeah, he did apparently get concussed, or he did vomit in the ring, so makes one think that he got concussed, but yes, hopefully he's doing better now.
They had a really, really awesome, use of talent with the Powerhouse Hobbs thing, because Hobbs and Hook were in a faction together, obviously Team Taz. Hobbs is friendly adjacent with, like, Samoa Joe, and he's got beef with the Death Riders, and bring him in. And I thought it was really cool because this was like Samoa Joe's held the world title in this company. He's held the TNT title. This is Shibata's first title in this company, but it's Shibata. He's held plenty of titles in his life. This was Hobbs's first title win in AEW or any AEW Jason company. Because remember, he was an AEW dark guy.
Worked his way up
in the pandemic, and they're like, oh, okay, we can use this guy. And they were right. But once they got him here and they started developing him, he had some, you know, title chances, but he never could get over the hump. And then Samoa Joe kind of made a big deal by giving him the belt. I thought that was really cool. I thought it worked.
Yeah, I thought that was a really cool moment. Too. I like that a lot. I thought that was smart. I don't know if that was like pre-planned or if that was just a spur of the moment thing, but either way, it worked out great. I thought it was a very cool touch. And really, I also thought there was a touch of, okay, now you're in the ops. And kind of thought the op thing's been a little not cool, despite the coolness of like Samoa Joe. But I feel like this was the first moment where it felt like a genuine thing. And, I thought that was cool. I just liked this a lot. I thought the Death Riders worked really well as heels. I like, don't want to specifically put him over. I think Wheeler Yuta has really improved with the Death Riders, I think he's a great heel, a great pissant, and I really enjoy what he has been doing. He's been easily, I think, the most interesting part of the Death Riders overall, and I just thought this was a great moment and a great match, and I really liked it.
Yeah. I thought, one, you talked about the venue earlier. The way they came into the venue, it looked so cool. It wasn't cavernous. It was, hey, we're actually coming through this crowd of fans. There wasn't like a pathway. The second level balcony is literally right there, and you can see it. It's close quarters. I thought it looked great. I thought it was great. I thought the whole venue looked awesome. Screw running big buildings. Like Rupp Arena holds 20,500.
Jesus.
For basketball, Fred. 20,000.
And look, I mean, obviously it is ideal to have a hot crowd in a big building because then you have all the people there and they give you money. But for like 6 to 12 months, AEW was not going to the right size buildings. They were going to these buildings that were way too big. And even if the crowd was hot, it was like, you know, like they were on the moon. And that ain't going to help anyone. So it helped a cooling product feel even cooler. And now we're back to where they are appropriately sized. They have the right, you know, the right size weekly TV buildings. And it's just so much more fun this way.
Yeah, it is. But they came out. I thought the match was worked really well. I thought it was on an overall level, the all parties worked really hard and really well. I gave this 4. This was good. You had a good feel-good moment. And I thought it was a happy accident that you had John Moxley getting choked out, because you can easily make the in-canon argument that, hey, he doesn't normally do trios matches. He doesn't fight for these trios titles. And he got caught by Samoa Joe, who is a former world champion. I don't think it makes Moxley look bad at all. I think it helps the ops a lot. I think,
and it also sets up a future match between Mox and Joe very conveniently, because they were already kind of teasing that that was a direction they were going to go. And I think that that'll be very good TV, because I think that they can build a match really well. And like, look, I'm very down on those Adam Copeland matches with John Moxley, but what did not fail was the builds to those matches. Those were successful. And those, I mean, that was reflected in ratings. And I mean, their numbers have been up this year. In fact, in the news notes, I saw that Meltzer wrote that in the UK, year over year, from quarter one last year to this year, Dynamite's up 38%. And Collision is up 49%. And in Canada, Dynamite is up 17.7%. Now, I did not look closer to see if there was some kind of TV station move or whatever, but barring that, you know, going from like greater access or whatever, it's clear that they are more successful right now. And part of that is that they have this Death Riders, main event storyline. And yes, to some extent, it is like House of Torture, and the matches can be really a drag sometimes. And I think that I'm concerned about Moxley as a worker, I'll be honest, just because I still think he has the raw qualities to do it. But like what he's putting on is not up to snuff, in my opinion. And
it's weird, because how much of that, the Cope stuff, can you put on a Cope versus putting on a Moxley?
Right. Cause I think that there needs to be some blame on Mox for those Cope matches too. Mm-hmm.
I thought the match with Swerve was well worked. The problem was you knew Hanger was getting involved, and I don't think that has anything to do with Moxley. So like that was trying to be a 4.25 star match before all the shenanigans at the end. And it just, I don't really feel comfortable rating it for that purpose, because it just kind of got derailed due to no fault of the wrestlers themselves. You know, like it's Moxley's a hard one, because he peaks really high and then he just has these clunkers where he just doesn't work. So how do you quantify that wrestler? I think that's a difficult proposition. and I think why you're being very critical of his work, which I think is very fair, but I also think it's not the entire story.
Yes. I think it's worked as a story, to be clear. Yeah. But the individual matches, you know, like there was the four way that I absolutely hated how they did it at the end of last year. Like, I was on the live pay-per-view coverage for the site at that point and for that show, and I like lost my mind. And because I just hated that match so much. And, you know, I think that, you know, when you're, I understand that, like, there was a lot of booking decisions with the Swerve match. It wasn't just a straight match between the two of them, et cetera, et cetera. But also, when you're not having a great match with Swerve Strickland, it's kind of concerning, you know, in a certain way. So, you know, that's kind of another thought there from me. But this was great. I thought this was an absolute success. I really enjoyed it. And I thought it was, you know, you have Will Ospreay come out with champagne after, and like just the ring fills with baby faces. And it's, that's good wrestling, I think. Yeah, so I'll go over the quick hits on the news real quick, just so we can say we covered them. The Ryan Nemeth case we talked about like a month ago or two, it is going to arbitration officially for a clause in Nemeth's contract, apparently. August 24th will be Forbidden Door, which will be in London's O2 Arena. So that'll be cool. A special Dynamite episode called Grand Slam Mexico. Mexico. I don't know why I said it like that. I need more sleep. That's going to happen in Arena Mexico on June 18th. That should be a lot of fun. You're going to have heavy CMLL involvement with that. And I don't know that a U.S. promotion has ever taped in Arena Mexico before. So that'll be really cool.
No, hold on. U.S. promotions have taped in Arena Mexico.
Okay.
Nobody's ever done a live show from Arena Mexico.
Gotcha. Okay, cool. So that's the deal. All right. Let's see. Pac, Meltzer did say that he expects, he has heard talk, at least I should say, that Pac will be out for about 4 months.
Oh, it's a broken ankle? Shit.
He didn't have definite word on what it was, but I would not be shocked if it was a broken ankle. That would be my guess. That's just completely off of me seeing what happened. Brian Cage, knee surgery. He's back in the gym already, though, so might be a quick return for him.
Hey, maybe it was just like a scope or a fluid drain or something like that.
Yeah, hopefully. He did injure it in an indie match, so it wasn't on AEW TV. Tony Khan is adding, God, this I think is foolish, a third single women's championship to Ring of Honor.
Tag team belts, man.
Yeah, well, those would just make more sense to me, but it's the Pure Championship, so they're going to do it for the women. I don't think they have enough women in Ring of Honor to make that worthwhile. I think it's just a matter of numbers. But we'll see. I mean, I don't really watch Ring of Honor on the regular, so I can't, you know, say, claim it'll like deeply affect me personally or something, but it just doesn't make sense to me. Undisputed Kingdom, no more. Adam Cole, Kyle O'Reilly, Roderick Strong, they are now the Paragon, which is fine. It's just weird that they aren't like Undisputed something or other. That also leads me to believe that Matt Taven and Mike Bennett are on their way out of the company. Those guys are good. I hope that they end up somewhere they get used. It'd be great to see them in like TNA or something, or even CMLL, because Taven does have a history of being like a pretty high up the card guy in CMLL. So
yeah.
And Bear Bronson, who I completely sympathize with on this, publicly vented about not being used by AEW, and he blames it on basically Bear Boulder getting arrested for that domestic violence accusation a couple months ago. And he said, Bear Bronson just tweeted this. He said that he doesn't think he'll be used by AEW again. I think it's really unfortunate because they're already like bottom of the card as a tag team when this all happened. But I like Bear Bronson. He's a talented guy, and to me, I think it should be fairly easy to find a spot for a larger guy that is mobile and could work pretty well. but he just hasn't worked out for him. And I wish that he had a clearer spot to being used by AEW. I don't think it's really him being out, you know, it's not like he's being punished for what happened with his tag partner, but at the same time, like, you know, you can frame it that way. I just think that he was unfortunate that he was in a, like, a jobber tag team. His partner got fired for allegedly being a real piece of shit. And now Bronson's stuck, and he doesn't even have the jobber tag team anymore. Jack Jameson has already been moved to some new act in Ring of Honor, I think. What's there for Bear? You know, maybe his contract will just expire. I hope he gets a good spot somewhere. I think he's good. I've liked what I've seen from him when he's been given time to show his ability and not just that gimmick they gave them. Like, when they were just Bear Country, you know, and were just kind of like a big Haas team, that was fine. That was a good gimmick. And then they were like, all right, but what if they're really gross people? Yeah. And it's like, this is some Vince McMahon shit. Like, some bad WWE, like, lower card looking stuff. But I feel bad for him. I do wish that he was in a better situation. I think he's talented. And I just love to see him somewhere. And, you know, again, you know, we bring up TNA again. I think that TNA, if he does leave AEW, TNA would be wise to give him a look, I think. WrestleMania weekend, let's talk about that. What have you watched? What are you looking forward to?
I'm actually watching the Tokyo Joshi Pro show as we're talking. I'm not gonna lie, I don't watch Joshi, not because of any other reasons, and I am stretched too thin with American wrestling to
really everyone's got their limits, man.
Yeah, so much of my life is dedicated around football, and then I try to not do a lot of sports outside of it just because, hey, I like to watch television. I've watched almost 25 full seasons of Law and Order SVU since the beginning of the year. That's my work show.
Sicko shit.
Yeah. Well, an 8-hour shift, I can watch like 16 episodes.
I understand what you're saying. Yeah.
It's so good, man. Stabler and Benson, they're like spirit animals. They're rule. But it's like, I'm watching Miyu Yamashita, and she's incredible.
Oh, she rules. Yeah. Oh. Yeah. I had to fight to get her on the FSM 50 last year. Like, I really, that was the one that was like, no, we're going to put her on the list. She's a top 50 wrestler. But I had her like, Miyu Yamashita or Miyu Watanabe?
I watched Miyu Watanabe. She was good, but Yamashita, yeah, like her presence, her facial expressions, she looks like a menacing killer. She feels like a menacing killer. Like,
yeah, when she, her problem last year was that she didn't work a lot of Tokyo Joshi Pro for me. And so she did a lot of these indie runs. And I have a joke where with her and Maki Ito, who I think is actually pretty good in ring in Tokyo Joshi, but they cross the ocean and then they suck, or they don't, they aren't nearly as good. But like Yamashita, when she's on in Tokyo Joshi Pro, she can have really high level matches. I had her 42nd last year on my list. Miyu Watanabe, I think, had a really fantastic year where they established her as a top performer. I had to really fight to get her on that FSM 50. But yeah, Yamashita is great too.
Yeah, just I really liked the TNA show. Nothing great, but it was all good. I did think the six-man tag with Mike Santana and the Hardys versus Mustafa Ali and the Nemeths was good.
Okay.
Better than
I can see that being pretty good.
Mike Santana, man. If that guy ever comes back to EW, he's got it. Mm. The ring presence is there. The effort is there. Still could be a little bit smoother with some of like his punches and kicks and transitions to and from spots, but he's figured it out.
Yeah, I think he's really unlocked something in TNA, and that's really cool to see happen. To see a guy, you know, be like, okay, I can be better than what you're giving me in AEW and go elsewhere and prove it. And that's awesome. So I'm very happy for him, and I hope that he gets a big payday off of it.
Me too. Bloodsport had some good stuff. I thought, for what it should have been, I thought Jonathan Gresham and Zack Sabre Jr. sucked. It was very disappointing. Big bummer. That should have been really, really good. It wasn't engaging. I thought it was boring. They went to overtime. Way too many like punching sequences and stuff in Bloodsport this year. It really disappointed. I recommend everybody watch Natty Neidhart versus Miyuta Masha. Cannot recommend that match enough. But I haven't watched a ton of stuff. I know everything with the Dragon Gate guys have been told is really good. Everybody should apparently go watch the Prestige show, which is free on YouTube. There's some good stuff, but it definitely doesn't feel the same as it has in years past. Spring Break should be decent tonight. I'm actually kind of intrigued by the Atticus Kogar Fuego del Sol match.
Matt, yeah, that could be good. That could genuinely be good. I think Fuego del Sol is, I mean, even going back to like AEW, I thought he was, by the time he left, I was like, man, he's don't let him leave. He's good. You could do something with him. Because he had a little like cult, you know, following by the time he left, and thanks to Cody. And I thought that he was, he could have been turned into like something really meaningful there, but he's finding success in the indies, and I'm glad to hear that because he's got talent, man.
Yeah. Barbed Wire Massacre. I'm mad at TNA. They stopped taking the ropes off for Barbed Wire Massacre. I feel like that's a mistake, but I don't know. Maybe I don't know. But that was gnarly. I mean, Sami Callihan looks like you and me put together at this point. He is huge.
Oh boy.
But I mean, this is where he thrives. The grimy stuff. Mance Warner loves it too. They were both really
good. I like Mance Warner. I saw him work a match yesterday, and I think he's, you know, he could be something somewhere, like meaningful. I hope that he gets that opportunity at some point because he could easily be like a little nasty guy on TV, you know? And once more, complimentary. Be saying that.
Yeah, it's...
Defy was... I covered Defy and I covered Dragon Gate USA Rebirth. I thought both were... I thought Rebirth was like a 6 out of 10 show, and I thought Defy was like a 5.5, just a little behind. Neither bad by any stretch, but they definitely had some down moments. I mean, we're talking about the indies a little bit. My biggest takeaway from WrestleMania weekend is I just think that there's some really bad scouting decisions being made by people. And I think, you know, I would specifically call out GCW, since they do so much with the collective and, you know, they're the ones with most of the stuff on streaming these days. There's just a lot of people, like you hear about like CMLL guys coming in and like Laredo Kid, not a CMLL guy, to be clear, just so no one's like, I got you. But like, to be clear with him, he comes up to the States and he gets, you know, he's trying to work this weekend and he got two bookings the entire weekend. And Laredo Kid's fantastic. You know, I just don't get it. I mean, that's a possibility, but like, I can come up with more and more guys. Like, Mad Dog Connolly is apparently working like once this weekend. Like, what the hell are we doing? You know, I just don't get it. And it's very frustrating because I don't know, like, I shouldn't be sitting at home on my ass and genuinely thinking, well, I could do a better job. And, you know, I just like, how about we, you know, there's like guys on the indies that are really good. Adam Priest is another one. Actually, let me double check that I'm talking about the right guy because I am. Yeah, Adam Priest. He's this. Have you seen Adam Priest work?
I'm not sure.
He's a little like spark plug dude, but I would say his body habitus is like Crash Holly, but he's a pretty good worker in the ring. But what he really excels at is being a heel. He is particularly good at just being a jerk that you want to see. And it doesn't take like years of investment with him or anything to get that across. Like, he just instantly comes across as the asshole from high school you hoped you would never see again. You know, but you're back in town and you see this dude at the gas station.
Okay.
And I don't think he's getting any major bookings, and you know, I can go on and on. It's just bizarre and really kind of sucks, man, because you know, this, you know, if you got Mania Weekend, you know, there's just a lot of talent that you could be working with, even with AEW apparently pulling most of their talent off of shows and WWE's real people not being available and everything, you know, and most of the New Japan people staying home. He should still be able to put together like really interesting cards. And, you know, like, I just think that some companies, including GCW, are really dropping the ball with that. And I hate it.
Yeah, it stinks, man. I'm hoping that AEW makes All In Weekend a real destination, because I think that could work really well.
Yeah. And I'd love to see like something spring up around there, but also with the focus of like, let's, you know, like last year we had the Dean show, which is fantastic. And like it showcased some talents that were really getting overlooked. And somehow those guys seemingly got very little out of it. And it's like, I mean, come on, you know, how can you not watch that show and be like, shit, I gotta book some people, you know?
Yeah.
I don't get it. I don't get it at all. But anyways.
If I ever win the lottery, Fred, we're gonna make a produce show.
I should not feel like I can do a better job than the professional people that are doing it, you know.
No, but we probably could.
But yeah, I think that's about it for AEW talk this week. And I'm going to try to watch the West Coast Pro show here in a bit and write something up for it. We'll see what else I get covered.
Yeah. High recommend the Tokyo Joshi Pro main event, by the way. Mizuki versus Miyu Yamashita was awesome. I gave it 4.5.
Oh, yeah, that'll be great. Those two are very good, so I'm very excited about watching that when I get to it.
I always get a little concerned when I see like Joshi wrestlers that are like 80 pounds and like how they'll come across, which I'll be real, like sometimes the strikes look bad because they're so small, but no, Mizuki's pretty good.
Yeah, Mizuki's good, and Yamashita really can be fantastic. Yamashita is unfortunate in that her highest profile uses in the States have been in some really dreadful matches against Thunder Rosa, when Rosa's back issues were like affecting her the most. Mm-hmm. So not a great time. And just some like GCW matches where it's like, I don't know who the hell she's going to face, you know? Like, it's a real roll the dice if she's going to be in there with anyone worth a damn or not. And sometimes not so much, so.
Yeah. Is what it is, but that is our show. Thank you, everybody, for joining. And as always, the dogs finally calmed down the second we were almost done. So.
They know. They got to figure it out.
Make sure you subscribe.
Give like, us share, stars. Tell your friends.
And tune into Voice of Wrestling for the best WrestleMania weekend coverage out there. I'm Tyler.
Tell your mom to listen to our show.
Yeah, that too. Have yourself a great day.
Take care, everyone.
Hi, I'm Andrew Rich. And if you're like me, you look at the state of modern wrestling discourse and think, wow, what a cesspool. That's why I'm here to tell you about Music of the Mat Remix. That's right, your favorite wrestling music podcast is back with a new format, where I bring on a guest and we play songs related to wrestling-themed topics. It could be a wrestling reference, a wrestling concept, a wrestling pun, things of that nature. Now, you might be saying, Andrew, that is a very, very tenuous connection to pro wrestling on a wrestling podcast network. Is this just an excuse to hang out with your friends and talk about music and ignore the rest of the wrestling landscape? Yes. Yes, it is. So listen to Music of the Mat Remix on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network, available on Apple, Spotify, or your podcast player of choice.
Hello, Voices of Wrestling listener. Dave Ryan here. Have you ever wondered to yourself, how many hidden gems are hidden away inside the last years of World Championship Wrestling? Have you ever asked yourself how many tenuous gags can be made about the name Mike Enos? And have you ever thought about what it sounds like for two Irishmen to interpret a very chaotic company through its B-show? The answers to all this and more are just a click away. Check out Days of Thunder every second Thursday on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network.